Chapter 12. Don't tell the truth about 9/11. As I have mentioned elsewhere, there seems to be a far greater than expected resistance among alternative knowledge researchers to talking about the evidence contained in Dr. Judy Wood's book and presentations. I have concluded, as I have also stated elsewhere, that this is not just due to ego, money, threats or similar reasons. Something else is going on. Informed and intelligent people, who have already broken through the mainstream indoctrination and programming, will not accurately report how the WTC was destroyed and what the destructive mechanism actually was. In this chapter, we will examine what some prominent 9/11 and alternative researchers have said about 9/11. Also, we will consider what they haven't said, when presented with a suitable opportunity or a certain set of circumstances. The running theme is that they talk about controlled demolition, thermite and DE-911 whilst ignoring most of the evidence and accomplishments of Dr. Judy Wood. In some cases, as repeatedly documented in this book, they disparage Dr. Wood and or her research. Dr. David Ray Griffin. He was the person that decided to set up the scholars group after he met Dr. Judy Wood. He has written several books on the 11th of September issues, the first of which was published in 2004. On the Gianni Hayes radio show on the 24th of September 2008, Griffin was asked to comment on the size of the debris pile following the destruction of the WTC.
Could Dr. Griffin please comment on the size of the debris pile vertically as it appears in pictorial evidence? It is my observation that the two towers are no more than 1 to 2 stories tall, and pictorial evidence suggests that the sub-basements are virtually intact and empty.
Yeah, I don't know about the sub-basements, that part of it, because a lot of debris certainly went down there and filled them in.
McCullough, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we have 2 minutes, so we'll need to go real fast.
Okay, Dr. Griffin, is it your position that there was a pile on 9/11 at the World Trade Center? Is it your position that there was a lot of big pile with 18 stories or so there that we could see and get pictures of?
Well, no. As I said earlier, each tower collapsed into a pile no more than 4, 5, or 6 stories high. And so almost all the concrete and all the materials in the buildings, all the desks and tables and computers and so on, were pulverized into this dust that came out, so that all that was left for the most part was the steel. And the steel was all conveniently sliced into pieces, most of it, and pieces about the right size to be put on trucks to be hauled away. So, no, there was no 18-story pile left.
Caller, what is your first name and where are you calling from?
Tim from New Mexico.
Okay, Tim, go ahead with your question, and then our guest will answer it. You can hang up after you give him the question.
Well, I had two comments also. What about the Scott tax on the back of the firefighters exploding? What accounts for that, Mr. Griffin? And also, how come
What on the backs of the firefighters?
The Scott tax, the oxygen bottles that the firefighters wear on their backs, what made those explode? Did they put bombs in the Scott tax? That's what they follow.
I don't know anything about that.
What is recording oxygen bottles exploding in the fire trucks and that? And also, how come most of the people that are into this 9/11 truth movement don't talk about Hurricane Erin, this huge hurricane headed right towards New York City?
I did have a guest on. Dr. Judy Wood talked about the hurricane, but go ahead with that.
Yeah. How come you never discussed this, Mr. Griffin? I mean, this is pretty unprecedented for a hurricane to be headed right towards New York City. And then at 8 o'clock that morning, this thing makes a 110-degree turn and heads out of town. And there was lightning and thunder reported at numerous airports around New York City, which is indicative of field effects that they can be created from these hurricanes.
Well, I'll say again, there are all sorts of things that may be related here, but they're not things I deal with. I keep focusing on the official story about 9/11 and why it's false. So, you know, there may be something to that, but I'm not the one to talk to about it.
Okay. David, what I wanted to ask you was, what about the issue of the molten metal? You know, we see people walking on that pile, and if it was as hot as they were claiming, wouldn't they have been burned just by walking on it, maybe even cooked? And why was it steam coming from it?
Oh, well, they did report that their boots, if they walk on it very long, their rubber boots would burn through. So it was very hot. And
you're talking after the fall, right?
After the fall.
Okay, because I know
after the fall,
there have been questions about before the fall, how hot the metal would be in the people in the windows.
Yeah, no, well, I know that we can certainly ask them that, but this was people reporting that they've seen people walking on a molten metal after they fell.
Well, they weren't walking on, they were walking on the ground, which was very hot in places, and it was verified as being terribly hot for several months afterwards.
Okay, well, this is our commercial cue. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back right after the...
He claimed that the debris filled the basements. This is untrue, as shown in the WDTTG book and elsewhere in Dr. Wood's presentations. On the same program, he was asked about the debris pile and stated the towers collapsed into a pile no more than 4, 5, or 6 stories high. However, he acknowledges that much of the building's contents were pulverized to dust, though the steel was cut into pieces about the right length to be hauled away. Another caller asked about the Scott packs used by the firefighters, air tanks, exploding on the backs of trucks. Griffin knew nothing about this. He was also asked about Hurricane Erin and said there may be something to that, but I am not the one to talk to about it. He expressed no curiosity about this. This is odd, as Griffin was later to write a book about climate change. On the same program, the host asked about the molten metal at the WTC site and Griffin reported that it was very hot and the responders working at the site would have boots that burned through. However, he does not discuss any accounts of burned feet. Griffin also claimed that the ground was hot for months after the event. Again, Dr. Wood covers all this and shows that this statement about high heat was not true. Further information about Griffin's statements is on Dr. Wood's website. She includes the following. It appears that David Ray Griffin values the hearsay of those on the payroll more than physical facts. This is very troubling. The molten metal myth seems to have been created as part of the official cover-up story. The above chart, which shows the maximum operating temperature for hydraulics, supports what Knight reporter Jim Dwyer has said. However, Griffin insults Dwyer by stating he fully displayed his ignorance of crucial facts. But the crucial facts support Dwyer, namely, that high temperatures would have indeed permanently damaged hydraulic equipment. The facts in this matter are well established and are available in mechanical engineering handbooks as well as on the internet, link. It appears that Griffin is actually the one who has the tendency to favor a priori arguments over empirical evidence. Readers can further investigate Griffin's connections, such as the one to Richard Falk, a CFR member, who wrote the foreword to one of Griffin's books. Griffin has also made comments about the need for global governance. Joseph P. Farrell. Farrell is the author of a number of books on conspiracy or alternative knowledge topics. He is quite prolific. Books he has authored include Roswell and the Reich, The Cosmic War, and Babylon's Banksters. Whilst, like other names mentioned here, he talks about some of the same topics that I do, he appears to have another agenda. For example, in his second presentation at the 2014 Secret Space Program Conference, J.P. Farrell begins to talk, at approximately the 30-minute mark, about cold fusion. He talks of how Dr. Ronald Richter was doing experiments in the late 1940s or early 1950s, which may have been similar to those which Pons and Fleischmann probably came to regret doing, years later. However, at no time does he mention the documented connection of some of the effects seen in cold fusion experiments to the events of 9/11. This is kind of ironic, seeing as this was discussed in Dr. Judy Wood's presentation at the Global Boom Conference, which took place some 18 months earlier, a conference that was organized by the same people. Mimicry? In her 2011 presentation at a UK group New Horizons, Dr. Wood reports that the remains of some WTC core columns, dubbed the spire, peels away like a banana. In April 2017, in an interview with Sage Monitor, Farrell was heard to mimic, copy the language of Dr. Judy Wood's description of the destruction of the WTC. He discusses how he witnessed the initial 9/11 events after returning home from a night shift. He worked as a casino floor manager in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He claims that he was watching the events of 9/11 unfold, after his friend who was staying with him, had turned on the television. He then says,
I'm hearing from the living room, oh my God, over and over again. And so I finally got up, put on my bathrobe, and came into the living room and said, what in the name of sense is going on? He pointed to the television screen, and I looked, and just as I looked, you know, the North Tower of the World Trade Center was on fire. And just as I looked, the second tower was struck, the South Tower was struck. And immediately I thought, you know, we're under attack. So I stayed up and watched the towers come down. And I began to notice two things. Number one, the meme was already being put out by the what I like to call the lamestream media, that, you know, was there a possibility that the fires could so weaken the structures that they'd come down? And of course, I thought that's nonsense, you know, because for one thing, you know, you were looking at black smoke coming out of them. The fires were, in other words, they were cool fires. They weren't oxygen rich fires. So I thought immediately, well, that's nonsense. So there's something going on here. And then the towers came down, and I deliberately made myself count. You know, I used my hands to kind of physically count. And I thought, gee, that's near free fall speed. So this is not a conventional collapse. This is some sort of controlled demolition. And the way it looked to me, Tim, watching the towers kind of be peeled like a banana, I thought this is not a conventional controlled demolition. There may be some sort of exotic technology at work here.
Now we're going to look from B1 and B2 positions, as well as from C, at what's referred to as the spire. There's that clump of core columns from Tower 1 that seems to remain just a little bit after the rest and then turns to dust. I'm sort of expecting or suspicious that is right above where those 14 people survived, who thought they would have been crushed and looked up and saw blue sky. Here's Tower 1 coming apart, and it peels away like peeling a banana, and left with these little spires sticking up. That's about 700 feet tall. It's got to be pretty strong to be standing unsupported that tall.
The reference to count with his hands also seems to mimic what Dr. Wood has said a few times in relation to clapping your hands quickly to see if you can match the speed at which the floors of the building are turning to dust. In the interview, he talks about various 9/11 hypotheses and claims that the presence of nanothermite cannot be explained by one hypothesis and so forth. He also talks of high heat in the area after destruction. He knows better. A real muddle up. Even though he had worked as an editor for the WDTTG book in 2008 and 2009, he does not mention this. Instead, he promotes disinformation and physical impossibilities, whilst acting like some kind of authority. So, to clarify the point, J.P. Farrell worked with Dr. Judy Wood for several months as an editor for Where Did the Towers Go? However, it seemed he then became involved in an operation to delay or prevent the publication of the book. See, the article is Richard Hoagland on a dark mission in 9/11 finding the truth. I did not name Farrell in that article, but it was Farrell who was responsible for taking the WDTTG manuscript to Farrell House Publishers. During the editing, Farrell wanted to remove photos of the toasted cars and he made several subtle changes to the text, which were unnecessary. He had detailed knowledge of the text, yet he rarely if ever talks about the details of what happened to the WTC, except, perhaps, to fit it in with his own storytelling about a possible operation within an operation. Suffice it to say, that Farrell has not been honest about his dealings with the WTTG material and has also tried to muddle things up in his presentations. Nick Biggish. Nick Biggish has made a name for himself in the alternative knowledge community through discussing the HARP facility in Alaska, having written a book about it with Gene Manning called Angels Don't Play This HARP. Essentially, he talks about the possible harmful effects of classified technology such as HARP. Back in 2006, I thought he would be quite familiar with the evidence which showed the official conspiracy theory of 9/11 could not be true. I was to be disappointed when, on the 10th of December 2006, on Art Bell's Coast to Coast program, he said regarding the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
Nation, we're in a conflict in Iraq, as an example, and we're there to win the hearts and minds and spread democracy. But that's not what the people apparently want. They want a theocracy, and if that's what they want in their own right to self-determination, maybe we need to recognize individual sovereignty as long as they keep it within the boundaries of their country and learn to leave people alone. We're the only country in the world with 800 bases and stations around the world to monitor and interfere with everyone else's politics. Maybe it's time to pull back a little bit towards our own borders, allow some governments to function. If they violate another state, if they violate the United States, I say stomp them into the Stone Age, as we did in Afghanistan. When we said give those guys up and they didn't do it, I think we were fully justified.
Mr. Biggish supported the bombing of Afghanistan in 2001. Mr. Biggish and I were both speakers at the BAM 2012 conference in Hilversum, Netherlands. He was present during Dr. Judy Wood's presentation about the destruction of the WTC at this same conference. Therefore, when an opportunity arose for me to ask him about his support of the bombing of Afghanistan in 2006, I needed to ask him if he had changed his mind about what happened on the 11th of September.
And you were talking about, the way that America was violated and on 9/11, and you said at that time that because Afghanistan didn't give up the terrorists, that you thought the bombing of Afghanistan was justified, and you said that on the Art Bell program.
Yeah.
But now, obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you attended Dr. Judy Wood's presentation yesterday.
Yes.
And as far as I'm concerned, the evidence she presents is irrefutable.
Very compelling.
It's irrefutable, and indeed she's taken this to court, and I don't believe there was an opportunity to discuss that yesterday. So I wondered if you'd had any shift in your conclusion about 9/11 and how that would affect your sort of discussion of 9/11 from after yesterday.
Absolutely. And there's been other evidence I think brought forward too that indicates a lot of other things with 9/11. And I have a very different viewpoint of warfare. All right, and a lot of people find it very objectionable, probably in this room. But this is my view of it. I didn't support either one of those wars as a way of solving the problem. But if a country is going to go to war, and we just spent trillions of dollars going into debt over these two wars, my view is, if you go to war and you really feel justified and that's the decision that's made, annihilate them. But don't rebuild them. And I believe that. And I know a lot of people find it objectionable, but if we really feel that justified, teach them a lesson and don't do it twice. And we are in debt up to our eyeballs. We're about to destroy the entire world's economy over two wars we probably shouldn't have been in the first place. Because we spent trillions and trillions and way too much time interfering with people's sovereignty. If people want a theocracy, let them have it. If they want a democracy, let them have it. If they want socialism, let them have it. Stay in your own boundaries, self-determine your own government, and let's all have enough respect to let people do that. And that's our problem. We interfere with everybody's government and their right to self-determination. And that's really what it's about. I may not agree with somebody doing something next door, but if they're within their boundaries, let them have their own revolution. We had one, and everybody else has too. But it's self-determination, I think, is primary. And staying within your boundaries is part of that right to self-determination. I don't care what government you choose.
As you can hear, instead of answering my question about whether he had a new understanding of what really happened on the 11th of September, Mr. Biggis chose to go into a monologue about the U.S. attitude to warfare and invasion. It would have been simpler if he had just answered my question by saying no, which is what he meant. James Corbett and Mark Gaffney. In an interview with 9/11 book author Mark Gaffney by James Corbett on the 9th of September 2012.
And as you note, the Building 6 really has a type of crater-like damage in it after the attacks, which is not easily explainable through just simply the collapse of the Twin Towers. What can we make of that fact?
Well, I would encourage your viewers and listeners to go up to go Google this. Just Google Building 6, World Trade Center 6, and crater, and photos or videos, and you're going to come up, you're going to find it on the internet, at YouTube and other places. This thing had a huge crater right in the center of it, and the official story was that the debris from Building 1 actually caused this collapse in Building 6, but there were, early on, there were some photos posted on the internet that were taken from inside that crater, you know, showing the debris in there, and there's no visible columns, and they're very distinctive. You know, the outer wall of building of the World Trade Center, Twin Towers, were very distinctive outer wall there, and that would have been obvious if those columns had fallen into there, and there were not any in there that I could see, and in fact, very little debris of any kind. It looked like the whole thing had been excavated. We're talking about an enormous cavity in the center of the building. So it looks to me like some sort of explosion happened there. And when that happened, don't know. But, you know, my guess is that it may have been demolished during the collapse of nearby Building 1 or 2 when the dust cloud was concealed.
In a program podcast on the 11th of June 2011, about 20 minutes in, James Corbett dismisses Dr. Judy Wood's research using the term space beams. The term space beam, given that it's not a term that Dr. Wood has used in her book, website, or many presentations and radio interviews. Here is what he said.
Let's move on to an email from Anthony, who writes, I have yet to hear you comment on the split in the 9/11 research movement between the ideas of Dr. Judy Wood and her energy weapon theory and Professor Stephen Jones, who backs the thermite theory. Do you lend any support to Dr. Wood's ideas or research? Right, very good question, Anthony, and I'm sure it's one that many people out there have, so let me be as clear as I can. I do not support mini-nukes, I do not support TV fakery, I do not support no planes, I do not support Vic Sims, and I do not support mystery magical energy beams from outer space. And I don't know how much more clear I can get on that. And that's not to say, please don't take that as me saying that I 100% unequivocally believe that the thermite story is the correct story. In fact, I have my reservations about that as well. But personally, ultimately on this question, I think there are a lot of really fascinating and interesting distractions out there from some of the real issues of 9/11. And it's something that I've been saying for years now and continue to stress, that I think that a lot of the physical anomalies of what happened on 9/11 are ways to keep people in these endless infighting arguments about this and that little part of this or that theory, and you don't support this research, or oh my god, you must be a COINTELPRO, you must be part of the New World Order. Well, if that's the level of discourse in which you want to participate, then go right ahead and can stop listening to me right now. But ultimately, I think that we have to go beyond the physical anomalies of 9/11 and look at the grand context of 9/11. That's something that I've stressed over and over, and it starts with things like following the money trail for 9/11, and looking at the air defenses on 9/11, and looking at the big players on 9/11. Again, there's way too much to go into right now, but suffice it to say, I think that a lot of these ideas, whether consciously put out there by COINTELPRO type people to split up the movement or not, ultimately has that effect. So it doesn't really matter if it's government funded or not. And that's pretty much all I have to say about that at the moment. People can continue to send me links to all of these interesting ideas about the interesting ways that the towers were brought down, and I'll continue to look at them, but I haven't seen a single thing that's convinced me yet of any of these theories, and I doubt that I'm likely to, but again, keep sending it in, and I'll take a look at it.
Mark Gaffney, again. author of the book Black 9/11, does not know the difference between theory and evidence and does not accurately discuss the evidence in Dr. Judy Wood's book. In an interview on Red Ice Radio, see Chapter 13, he states,
"But would be very upset with me if I don't ask you about Judy Wood's work here, considering that you did mention directed energy weapons potentially taking down Flight 93 near Shanksville. So could this technology possibly have taken down the buildings as well, in your opinion?"
That's a good question. No, I would answer no on that. I think the directed energy weapon, a high-powered microwave, would be... I believe this technology is not exotic. The U.S. military had it pre-9/11. And it would be the sort of thing that would be, you know, you could fit one of these devices in a small suitcase, and it could be battery-powered, and it would put out an electromagnetic signal that could be very damaging to computers, to any kind of electrical equipment, any kind of electronics. And a commercial aircraft would have no defense against this kind of weapon, because they're not hardened against electromagnetic energy like this type of weapon. It would have a range, an optimal range of probably around up to 5 kilometers. But what Judy Woods talks about in her book is very different. It would be, it would have to be a something, a space weapon, you know, based on a space platform, something like that. And although I found some of Judy Woods' research to be very interesting and valid, I really don't take it seriously. I think that the evidence for you know, in 2007, an independent team of scientists led by Dr. Stephen Jones found traces of residues of nanothermite in World Trade Center dust samples. And they also found actual unexploded ordnance traced in a little bits of nanothermite that had not exploded. And the other evidence for explosives is the large concentration, and I'd say about 5 to 6% by weight, of iron, little iron spherules, tiny iron spherules that were found in the dust. And this was one of the first things they discovered, because they, I mean, you just put a magnet up against the dust and all this iron comes out of it. And you put one of the, you put this under a microscope and you have these little tiny spherules. Spheres of iron, when iron is the principal constituent of steel, and this is hard evidence that steel melted in large quantities. So, you know, I think that the evidence is very strong, very compelling, that the buildings were taken down in controlled demolitions, and that those buildings were wired. Fairly large amounts of explosives were probably involved, and this was a major operation. They must have been working on this for months before 9/11.
Yeah,
it had to be a large operation. Judy Wood doesn't really offer an alternative theory, an alternative explanation. What she does in her book, this was my assessment anyway,
sure.
That she basically identifies a number of anomalies, and then she suggests that these point to the use of a directed energy weapon. But, you know, this would be very exotic. I am not convinced that the U.S. military even has something like that. I certainly have not seen any evidence for it.
What do you make of the footprint of the buildings being so so small?
Well, again, I think this points to a controlled demolition. If a plane had hit a building and caused it to, you know, weaken on one side, and if the building, if fires had caused other damage, you know, at that level of the building, you would expect the building would have tipped over. It would have been a very asymmetric collapse, but instead we have these very perfectly symmetrical collapses, you know, all the way down to the ground. I mean, how do you explain that?
Yeah.
That's impossible. The core columns and at the base of the World Trade Center Twin Towers were 7 inches thick steel. So there's no way that you would have had a progressive collapse, because as the building collapses, you get it, the steel gets thicker and thicker, stronger and stronger. If there had been a collapse, it would have been a partial asymmetric collapse.
Ian R. Crane. It was in 2005 that I first encountered Ian R. Crane in the UK 9/11 Truth Campaign, see Chapter 21, when he was said to be its chairman. Since then, he has talked about the events of 9/11 in many of his public presentations. However, he has never, to my knowledge, discussed the WDTTG book. Indeed, in a presentation given by him on the 25th of September 2011, at Conway Hall, London, he stated,
"Now it's the World Trade Center towers and the collapse of the towers that cause you to have to suspend your knowledge of Newtonian physics if you believe the official version of events. Building 7 was indeed a perfectly executed controlled demolition. The building came down in its own footprint, and the pile of rubble was 12.5% the original height of the building, exactly as per the controlled demolition textbooks. Buildings 1 and 2, which are more than twice the height of Building 7, just to put it in perspective, Building 7 was roughly the height of tower at Canary Wharf. Just to put it in perspective. The buildings 1 and 2 collapsed into dust. The buildings totally disintegrated. There is no explanation as to what has caused that. It's a big question that's left open. Take a look at this for a second.
Jan Irvin. Jan Irvin runs a website called Gnostic Media. One of the areas it focuses on is critical thinking and the trivium. In medieval schools, this was the group of liberal arts first studied, comprising grammar, rhetoric and logic. He posts podcasts and articles on his website and, in one posting made on the 25th of January 2010, entitled Logical Fallacies, the Critical Thinking Meme, someone added the following comment. He was asked, "Have you seen Dr. Judy Wood's work? It undoubtedly has merit. The thermite theory seems likely a disinformation effort. I recommend all to suspend judgment until you have spent some time looking at the evidence presented by Dr. Wood. I am sure you will be interested and I would love to hear your opinion." His reply included the following words. "This isn't the 9/11 discussion forum. This is the place to study fallacies. However, when I studied Wood's, there were too many fallacies. The one I find most interesting is Dmitry Kalzaf." Again, Irvin didn't say what the fallacies were and has clearly not studied the evidence. A friend of mine, Mena, wrote to Irvin in July 2015. Had he, in the intervening years, discovered the truth about Dr. Wood's research, and what happened on 9/11? Here is part of the thread of the conversation. From, contact@gnosticmedia.com. 2. Mena. Subject, re, Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Date, Wed, the 13th of July 2016, 15:59 and 24 seconds plus 0000. Thanks, but I don't think Judy would be a good fit, as she appears to be part of the controlled op you talk about with Andrew Johnson. Judy makes a lot of speculations, and right where she should be meeting the owners of proof, she falters and argues the arbitrary. Maybe her book is better than her awful presentations. She's also Jewish and most of the evidence points to Israel as being behind 9/11, probably why she avoids discussing this and Zionism. I've had former friends, such as Richard Grove, who was totally dirty and peddled the lies about 9/11. But I've not read Johnson's book to know if he'd be a good guest. Thanks for your interest. Much appreciated. Jim Maz. Jim Maz passed away on the 2nd of August 2017 at the age of 73. He was very well known and very well regarded in the alternative knowledge community, having published many books on various topics. He was perhaps most well known for his work on the John F. Kennedy assassination, and his book Crossfire was used as a basis for the 1991 Oliver Stone film JFK. It appears Jim Maz rarely commented about the destruction of the WTC, but on 27 December 2009, Jim Maz appeared on the Dave Hodges show. A man called Sheldon Day phoned into the show to get Jim Maz's take on what destroyed the WTC and ask him whether he had studied the evidence for directed energy weapons. In an audio clip from this interview, you will notice. 1. Jim Maz states there is no real substantial hard evidence proving the use of directed energy weapons. This is not true. 2. He will explain how he had put the thermite study in his book. He doesn't seem to have looked anywhere else. He seems to think the paper is valid and peer-reviewed, and he has not studied the chemical formula of thermite. It contains the same two materials that would have been found in large quantities in the WTC remains anyway, iron oxide, rust, and aluminium, from the exterior. 3. He agrees that though thermite burns paper, there was a great deal of unburned paper in the WTC dust. 4. He mentions the cars on FDR Drive, but does not acknowledge that they are out of range of any thermite burning. 5. He acknowledges there may be a problem with the source of the thermite study. 6. He suggests a new investigation is needed, but he ignores the one that has been done by the most highly qualified independent scientist 121, lodged in the U.S. Supreme Court.
The problem with the directed energy weapons in the World Trade Center thing is that while that might be the truth, there is no real substantial hard evidence to prove that that's the case. So that's why I shy away from it, not because of being called a name. Now, as opposed to like David Ray Griffin and others, and including myself in my book, The Terror Conspiracy, who talked about thermite and the fact that controlled explosives, I think, undoubtedly were used also in the destruction of those buildings. And, of course, then I was the nut for siding with people who said, oh, there's controlled explosions, you know, which was just, oh, well, we can't even mention that. And yet today there is now a hard scientific proof that thermite, a nanotechnology form of thermite, has been found in the debris of World Trade Center materials. And that was confirmed in a peer-reviewed scientific journal in Europe. Now, what I want everybody to understand is, I, as an old journalist, I think that constitutes news. That should be headlines all across the country. A military-grade controlled explosive residue found in World Trade Center rubble. Okay? And yet, we don't see a word about that. It just doesn't appear. Now, I think that should convince any open-minded person that the so-called watchdog media is actually the lapdogs of the corporate interests that are running this country. And I think that that's why that there needs to be another investigation, a truthful investigation, and to prove other things up. And if they would do that, then we might could come up with the hard evidence to show that directed energy weapons, for example.
Well, Jim, let me ask you a question before you go further with this.
Yeah.
I think that thermite residue has been shown and proven.
Right.
Would there be any such trace signatures for energy-directed weapons?
Well, because that's such cutting-edge technology, see, that's the beauty of it. If you use the technology in a public event like this that is generally not known to the public, then you can put out any cover story you want to, and most of the public, including the so-called experts, are going to be hard-pressed to prove otherwise, because, as he said, this technology has been held within intelligence military communities, you know, and it's not known in the public. So it's like I try to tell people that I think those airplanes, because they exceeded their design limitations, which is an impossibility unless you can override the computer, and because their transponders all went off about the same time, which is an impossibility for four separate airliners being hijacked, and, you know, there would be a little bit of a time lag or advance in all of that. These are, to me, the telltale signs that computer capture was used to take over those planes and guide them wherever they wanted to go. And yet, when I tried to tell people that in 2001, it's like, what are you talking about, you know? And yet, when we invaded Iraq, we invaded Afghanistan, what went in first? Those Global Hawk remote-controlled planes. Exactly. And now you see them in advertisements for the Air Force, advertisements for the Marines. I mean, now it's like, oh, yeah, sure, we got that technology, but we didn't know that in 2001.
Okay. Sheldon, a follow-up? Quick one?
Well, this could really turn into a long discussion, because there may have, you know, the thermite thing. Military uses thermite to burn paper. Well, look at all the paper laying around after the towers went away.
Exactly. And, very good point.
And the guy who spearheaded this whole campaign about thermite, Professor Stephen Jones, was instrumental back in the late 80s of covering up this cold fusion technology that these two renowned world chemists, Pons and Fleischmann, were trying to put out to the public. So we can't trust Stephen Jones. And the other thing I wanted to say was, hey, Dave, have you ever heard of John Lear?
Yes, I have.
I know John Lear.
Yeah, well, he doesn't talk about it on the Coast to Coast show, but if you listen to John Lear on other shows, you know, he's got a lot of flight experience. He says there were no planes on 9/11. It was all TV fakery and or scalar holographic imagery.
Well, again, I'm certainly not ruling out anything just offhandedly, but there's going to have to be more work and more, you know, you have to be very, very careful of all these sources, just like you pointed out the problem with Griffin and the cold fusion. The thing that I can't help but look at is there are photographs of cars on the FDR that are burned and scorched, and they were blocks away from the World Trade Center.
Exactly.
On the 22nd of June 2014, Jim Maz made a presentation at the Bloor Cinema in Toronto 20, which was hosted by Richard Siret and organized by Patrick White. Dr. Wood gave a presentation, organized by the same people, on the 11th of September 2016. Approximately 1 hour and 26 minutes into the recording of this presentation, Jim Maz was asked if he was familiar with Dr. Judy Wood's book and the presence of Hurricane Erin.
I'd like to ask Jim, what do you think of Dr. Judy Wood's information in her book about 9/11 and why you never mentioned it, and specifically about the hurricane that day that never seemed to show up in the news?
So the directed energy weapons supposedly responsible for bringing down the North and South Tower.
Exactly. I am familiar with all that, and you will find that I wrote about Judy Wood in my 9/11 book, The Terror Conspiracy Revisited. I think Judy Wood is onto something. I think there was exotic technology being used on 9/11, technology that the public was not aware of. I did mention in my talk the Global Hawk computer capture technology to take over those aircraft. See, I was onto that early on, but see, in 2001, nobody knew about that. You try to tell people, yeah, they remotely capture an airliner and fly it anywhere they want to, and they just look at you like you're nuts. But I already was aware of this because in the 80s, I was doing an interview with an airline pilot, and he suddenly popped off and said, you know, my job's just redundant. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, on the new wide-body Boeing jets, said the computer runs the aircraft. He said, I'm just there in case the computer breaks down. And so I was well aware that that these computers were running the airplanes, and I was also aware that in the summer of 2001, a Boeing 737 took off from Edwards Air Force Base, flew to Australia, flew 12 missions, flew back, landed safely, and all the time with no one on board. It was remotely controlled. But this was technology that was not known to the people at the time. So when they pulled off 9/11, nobody could understand that they could capture those airplanes and fly them where they wanted to. Today, we know all about Global Hawk, and we know now drones, pilotless aircraft, that's a big topic now. Same thing with the World Trade Center. There was some very exotic technology going on there, and frankly, I tend to agree with Dr. Woods. I've met her, and I've heard all of her arguments, and I think that there was some kind of very unusual technology going on. The only place I would differ is that she thinks that this beam weapon may have come from a satellite. And while that's possible, I think there's an even closer explanation, because I happen to know that at Brookhaven National Laboratory on Long Island, for some years they had been working on a particle beam weapon. And the idea was to try to see if they could stop a missile in flight, which has been the goal for many years. And if you all remember the TWA 800, okay, that was knocked down by this beam weapon. It was a military test. It was friendly fire. It was unintentional. They didn't mean to knock down the airliner. But it was late getting off. It was running parallel to Long Island, about 65 miles southeast, and climbed into the beam of this beam weapon, which was aimed at a missile that had been launched. So there was a missile, TW-800. Everybody concerned basically was telling the truth. People said there was a missile. There was a missile. People said there was an unidentified aircraft. That was a target decoy aircraft that they were going to shoot the missile at. people who said there was a wavy light in the sky, that was the beam weapon. And even the government who said, well, a spark got the central fuel tank and blew the plane up, which is essentially true. What they didn't tell you was, how did the spark get the fuel tank? And it's because when that plane was hit with that beam weapon, it fried the onboard computer and caused everything to splash and spark, and valves were opening and closing, and et cetera, et cetera. And if you go back and check, you'll find that Boeing Company, when they said it was a spark in the fuel tank, they started raising all kinds of lead because they said, wait a minute, our planes don't just blow up, you know. And then all of a sudden, and even Senator McCain was totally against this, the Air Force got a deal where they bought 25 Boeings from Boeing Company, and they were going to use them for like 10 years and then turn them back to Boeing. What a sweetheart money deal for Boeing. And after that, they shut up about the TWA-800.
So now let us briefly look at his 2011 Terror Conspiracy Revisited book, published after WDTG. In the chapter entitled Firefighters Thought the Fires Were Controllable, Maz writes about a prolific blogger, calling himself the Anonymous Physicist, and how this blogger thinks an EMP pulse results in massive sparking of electrical cables and connectors, leading to fires and explosions. Maz then does indeed mention Dr. Wood, writing, two well-known 9/11 researchers, Morgan Reynolds and Judy D. Wood, also noted the evidence of an EMP pulse, noting electrical outage over a wide area with repairs taking over 3 months, suggesting M-pulses. To further support the idea of EMP use, it should be noted that there were reports of many cell phones becoming inoperative near the WTC buildings. This is hardly true. Dr. Wood doesn't talk about EMPs. It is misrepresenting, again, what she said. Though Maz correctly includes Dr. Wood's biography and what he says about the WTC bathtub seems to be accurate, he does not go into enough detail. Nor does he openly suggest people read Dr. Wood's book to get all the details. Next, he talks about the toasted cars, reporting and quote from Dr. Wood, from a press release I wrote in 2008. In 2003, this date is incorrect, it should be 2008, Wood stated. I have been collecting data over the last year and a half or so, and I have found these distinct and unusual characteristics, which I have given names such as fuming and toasted cars. I have even noticed flipped cars in some pictures. In some cases, the flipped cars are sitting next to trees that are fully covered with leaves. This prompted the question, if the flipping of the cars was caused by big explosions or wind from the towers coming down, how did the leaves stay on the trees? Despite Maz having written about black programs related to UFO technology, etc., he again leaves this reference hanging and explores it no further. His book does not include any pictures of flipped cars or any similarly relevant evidence. Steve Bassett. From his website. Stephen Bassett is the executive director of Paradigm Research Group, founded in 1996 to end a government-imposed embargo on the truth behind the so-called UFO phenomenon. Stephen has spoken to audiences around the world about the implications of formal disclosure by world governments of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He has given over 1,000 radio and television interviews, and PRG's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media. In 2013, PRG produced a citizen hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. On November 5, 2014, PRG launched a congressional hearing, political initiative seeking the first hearings on Capitol Hill since 1968 regarding the extraterrestrial presence issue, and working to see that issue included in the ongoing presidential campaign. In the context that we are discussing, we can draw close parallels between the activities of Steve Bassett and Dr. Stephen Greer, discussed in Chapter 6. Though some people are uncomfortable connecting the UFO/ET/alien issue to 9/11, I speak about this publicly and expect researchers and knowledgeable people like Steve Bassett to point out such connections when they are obvious. Clearly, he is interested in the weaponization of black technology. This came up in a roundtable discussion on SAT the 28th of June 2014, at 2140 in, at the 2014 Secret Space Conference held in San Mateo, California.
One of the very possible reasons why the secrecy has been so profoundly maintained is that the power of the energy systems and technology that's being worked on, as well as the anti-gravitic technology. If it gets in the wrong hands, could be a serious problem. I'd like to mention something to you may have forgotten about. Back in 1991, 92, actually slightly before 91, there were articles which I read, because I was in Washington at the time, that the military was kind of had a problem in that they had been developing a huge range of very sophisticated weapons and were very frustrated that there wasn't a war that they could use them in. There just hadn't been one for a while. Joseph Farrell made a key point that maybe the secrecy is because these weapons, if they get in the wrong hands, could be dangerous. I would like to make the suggestion that they are already in the wrong hands.
This is very similar to what Stephen Greer said in his Forbidden Knowledge book. So, again, the same applies here. If Steve Bassett had referenced or described Dr. Judy Wood's book at this point, he would have been able to illustrate that he was, indeed, correct. He would have been making an observation, not a suggestion. Would that not have increased his credibility, referring to a comprehensive, publicly available investigation by a scientist, part of which had been submitted in a court case 39? This investigation, contained in Where Did the Towers Go?, even includes reference to certain anti-gravitic effects discovered by John Hutchison and inspected by Colonel John Alexander in 1983. I mentioned Colonel John Alexander because Steve Bassett should know about him. As a UFO commentator, Alexander has strong military ties and knowledge. In a similar manner to how Stephen Greer was questioned, Steve Bassett was asked if he believed the official account of 9/11 at the UFO Truth Southern Conference on the 29th of April 2017.
Steve, do you believe in any way the official version of 9/11?
Well, the answer is, do I believe that the investigation of 9/11, which they didn't want to do until they were forced to by the women victims, right, who put up enough of a stink and they finally did an investigation, which is an utter insult to the American people, unbelievable insult. But the investigation is not full, it's not adequate, and there are major discrepancies. We do not know the full story. What we have is 100 theories, all of which cannot be right. So essentially, one of the most important events in American history has been, again, just like so many other things, left unresolved because you don't need closure, you're just people, right? And so as far as 9/11 is concerned, my principal focus there, and I know Richard Gates very well, the number one problem that investigation and the government has is Building 7.
Why would Bassett highlight that he knows Richard Gage? To confirm that they are both members of the same cover-up crew? Conclusion. I am sure that having read this chapter, some people will be rather despondent or depressed. I have shown that a sample of people who should be saying yes, I have studied Dr. Wood's book and the evidence in it proves that the towers were destroyed using some type of undisclosed technology. The towers turned to dust before hit the ground. This is really important to understand. This statement would take less than 1 minute to read out. Instead, these researchers say no such thing. If they say anything at all, it is wildly inaccurate or woefully incomplete. Before you reach the end of this book, you will read about many more examples of this sort of activity, which is central to how the cover-up of 9/11 evidence works.